How important are genetics for people getting well? Because we talk about genes and the reason I'm sick is because my genetics told me I was sick. Right. Or I have a death sentence because my mom got cancer, I'm going to get cancer. Yeah. So what part does genetics really play in the health of a client?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial. So what can you do? Well, the genetic report empowers you. And I had one lady said, I don't want to know my genes. I said, why? She said, because I just worry about them. I said, wait a minute. Yeah. What doesn't empower you to do something to help yourself? And I told her, look, now I know you've had these genes. I can actually tell you what to do to prevent those heavy metals from crossing your blood-brain barrier. You can detox them, right? You can get them out. And that's where people don't really realize it. You can actually change somebody's life by changing their gene expression.
Absolutely.
With nutrigenomics. Mm-hmm. So nutrigenomics changing.
After decades of being an ER doctor, what was the biggest lie that you learned in medical school that you now have to teach your patients to unlearn?
Is that everything that you learned in medical school was correct. If you want to know what the biggest, I don't know if you want to call it a lie, but the misconception, I guess I would say, would be that.
Dr. Andy, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you. It's a long time coming. We missed paths about a year ago, and here we are today. So powerful message of hope and healing, of transformation. You have a very successful clinic, having a lot of really challenged cases. Mm-hmm. We might get into some of that, that aren't supposed to get well, but get well.
That's right.
Having challenges that supposedly are uncurable, you know, those sorts of things, but watching the body heal over and over again. And I think this is going to be one of the most powerful podcasts that we have this year.
Awesome.
Because you bring so much wisdom. So tell me how you went from medical doctor to functional medicine doctor doing this type of work.
All right. Well, it's an interesting story. My wife is involved in it, so I'll get her involved in that eventually. But I was an ER physician for almost 40 years, and I was an ER director at several hospitals, worked at lots of different places, saw a lot of sick people. Loved what I did. It was very, very exciting, really interesting in what I did because we could fix people, right? Mm-hmm. But there was a group of people that would come in that I could never fix because it was not really ER material, right? So we had bones sticking out of legs. I could do something with that. But when somebody came out with a chronic condition, I really couldn't do much for them in the short amount of time I had. So they'd always ask me questions like, well, I've been going to my doctor for so many years. Can't you help me? And it was very humbling to me because I really didn't have anywhere to send these people because I would only tell them to go back to see their family doctor they'd been going to for several years, and they couldn't get well. And so it was a frustrating time when we were trying to see those kind of patients. I loved doing the trauma, I loved doing all that, but those cases were really challenging. But in my heart, it was still, I had a passion for those people, and I felt bad for them because I see them over and over again coming back to get help when they couldn't get help. And so a family situation came up, and this was the part that really turned a corner, I guess you might say. Mm-hmm. One day my wife came to me and she said, Randy, you're a good doctor. Can't you help someone in our family? And I said, well, sure. Well, what do you want me to do? And she said, well, our grandson, obviously, he's must be on the spectrum. He might be autistic. He's not acting right. He walks on his tiptoes. He doesn't talk to people. He's off on his own. Really doesn't interact with anybody, not talking normally, and he should be at this age. And so since you're a doctor, can't you help him? And I said, well, I'll tell you what. With my history, I was an analytical chemist. I knew how to do research. I said, I'm going to do some research. I'll go down a rabbit hole. It's not an ER thing we can fix in an emergency room, but I'll definitely go down that pathway. So I did, and I started studying some things. And a couple weeks went by. We were sitting at the dinner table one night. My wife says, what'd you find out? And I'm like, unfortunately, Cheryl, I really don't have anything to tell you. I mean, you can give them drugs that might be able to help out a little bit, but there's really not going to be any cure for this. And she looked me straight in the eye like I'm looking at you in the eye, and she said, I'm not going to accept that. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And she's like, well, I'm going to study natural medicine because I think that might be able to do something with that. And I'm like, well, okay, you go for it, girl. I'm all for it. You do it. All right. So I'm very skeptical. I was a traditionally trained doctor, really kind of didn't go down that pathway. I was very doubtful that she was going to find anything. So little by little, she was studying at night. She'd wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and she'll get a kick out of this, me telling this story, because she'd wake me up and say, hey, I just learned something about the mitochondria. I need to talk to you about that. I was like, Cheryl, I'm trying to sleep. I got to get up and go to work in the morning. Can't you just wait? And no, I'm excited about it. The more she learned, mm-hmm. it was just exciting. And she started doing little things with this child that mm-hmm. Was helping him little by little. I would say that slowly he began to get better. He began to walk normally, talk normally, began to interact with us. And over a period of a few months, he was no longer on the spectrum. And that spurred my curiosity mm-hmm. to the point that I was like, oh my gosh, there's something to this.
Yeah, there's something there.
Yes. And so I got very interested then in finding out what she was learning and some of the things I'd never heard about. You know, when she was talking about some of those topics, I'd never heard about them because that's not in the traditional world. And so I began to look for a fellowship in some kind of a medicine that would help me to get training to do what I needed to do to help people like that. And that's where it all turned. And I mm-hmm. enrolled in an integrated medicine fellowship out in San Diego. And we completed that in a couple years, a lot of training, a lot of things I've never heard before. And quite honestly, it was for a while, it was a little bit concerning because I was a little bit depressed because I mm-hmm. felt like a lot of things I learned, I needed to relearn in a way that was actually could help people. And so that's what we did. We opened up a clinic one day a week thinking we could help other people, not just our own family. Mm-hmm. And we opened one day a week and we were sharing an office with another doctor. And we got really busy really fast. And we ended up pushing him out of his office, basically. And so I said, well, we can't do that. We need a bigger space. And so we moved to another town and we opened up a clinic in that town. And now it's just blossomed, and we've seen people from all over the United States coming to see us, and we have two people who come from Germany to see us, just to do things to get them well, which nobody else can help get them well. So yeah. That's the story.
That's a great story. I remember when I was sick, I would have done anything to find a Cheryl and a Dr. Randy. I would have done anything because I was desperate, and this was 20 years ago. Yeah. So I don't even know if you were doing this work then, probably not.
No.
And so there wasn't very many people. And the ones that were doing it were really labeled as quacks. So you were afraid and they were suppressed. And so we were running all over the country trying to get well, going to Shoemaker and, you know, Andrew Cutler's protocols for heavy metals and like all the rabbit holes, right? Yeah. Endocrinologist, anything to get well. And it took me, yeah, I don't know, a good 8 years, 5 years for sure.
Yeah.
And you're seeing turnaround 6 months.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing. I mean, the people that come to us all have a similar story, basically. It's like you. I mean, they've been to many places. I mean, it's unusual to have somebody travel across the country from California to come to West Virginia to see a doctor that's doing something that we're doing. And they sit there in front of me and I say, why did you come so far? There's got to be people doing what you do there. Or what we do there, and they say, oh, they always have a similar story. Like, no, I knew somebody that came to you, they were not well, and I have a similar story that they do, mm-hmm. and they're better now, and I want to get better, and I've been to all the doctors in my community, and I don't know what else to do, so I'm coming to you. You got to help me, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very humbling.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah, and that's what they do, and it's very humbling, but very rewarding as well. The transition period between being in the emergency room and transitioning to this new business was very interesting. I had doctors that would come up to me in the hallway at the hospital mm-hmm. and say things like, "Why are you? How come you're never sick? I get sick all the time. I had the flu every year in the flu season. Why? How come you're never sick?" And I would say, "Well," and I had the same story to everyone. I said, "My medicine's different than your medicine," and that's what I would tell them. And that was further interest. Like, well, what do you mean by that? You know. I would always tell them that, well, what I do is different because obviously I don't believe in the germ theory. I believe in the terrain theory. I believe your terrain is healthy. You can stay healthy. And it's funny now because those doctors now are my patients. They come to me and I take care of them and they don't get sick like they used to mm-hmm. anymore. And it's funny because all the different healthcare providers that are now rolling in the door, I never anticipated that to happen. And when you mentioned something like, well, you know, some controversies or something that might be, you know, I saw that you were going to talk about that. I figured people look at me like I had a third eye on my head, honestly, in the medical world. But how many healthcare providers are coming to me now? I have endocrinologists that come to me. I have a gastroenterologist. I have internal medicine docs that come to me, family practice docs, nurse practitioners, chiropractors, dentists, they're all coming. And they know their system is broken and we're getting results that they can't get. And when you ask them, why did you come here? And they always say, well, you know, I can't get better. You know, I'm doing everything in the medical world I know to do. I'm on two pills, we can't get better.
Yeah, taking pills, that's a fact though. Like if it's a fact. Medications do not cure.
No.
Very rarely.
No, right? It covers up symptoms.
Yeah, right. That's what they're designed for.
Well, that's what you're taught to do. Like when you're in medical school, when you get the book, the pharmacology book, it's everything from that point forward has a pill that's connected to symptoms. And when somebody comes in with a symptom, if you told me, look, I've got hypertension, and my medical brain says, I'm thinking beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, ACE inhibitors, this is the way my brain thinks because I've been trained to do that. Mm-hmm. But that's not really getting to the root of the problem, right?
So it's not root cause medicine.
It's like seeing a tire that's going flat in your car and you keep putting air in it all the time. I mean, you never fix the hole, right? So you gotta fix the hole to keep from having to put air in the tire. But doctors aren't trained to do that.
So I have that exact question, but I want to ask you this this question, because this has been bugging me. There's this theory that Rockefeller, after he lost a monopoly on oil, he thought about this and he's like, well, maybe I can manipulate medicine. And he started using petroleum-based drugs and then took over the colleges and pushed down naturopathic medicine, herbology. Is there science behind what he did is true?
Well, I believe it's true. I mean, I believe that if you dig far enough down the path, you'll find that there is science behind that. And I've been told that, you know, in my training, I was told the same thing, you know, like in the 1920s, I believe, is when that all started. Mm-hmm. And anyone that was curing people without the use of these so-called petroleum products or drugs, if you want to call them, those people were chastised, basically, were made to be looked at like they were witch doctors or snake oil pushers or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah, it always bugs me because I mean, if you look at it from a money standpoint, of course it makes sense. Like, especially then, monopolies, he already did it, and how can I do what made me a lot of money and do it again and use my influence? So it makes sense that he would do it.
It's true.
I don't know if he's looking that it was evil or whatever. It would make sense that he would do something like that based past behavior is your best predictor of future behavior. So Rockefeller definitely had some behavior of monopolies.
He was a smart guy.
Yeah.
Right. And he knew how to manipulate things, including businesses. And that's exactly what he did.
But the tides are turning.
Things
are changing.
The pendulum has swung in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And it all started. And listen, it's been coming for a while.
Yeah.
But man, COVID, that really kicked it into gear.
Yeah. People did wake up after that.
They woke up.
Like, wait a minute. Like, everything that you were telling me, you know, wasn't necessarily true.
Absolutely.
In many cases.
Yeah. Right. And people that are so tired of not getting well, you know, been in the hamster wheel of the medicine, go to the doctor for 5 or 10 minutes, get your prescription, go to the pharmacy, go back to the doctor in 3 months, do the same thing over and over again. You're in the hamster wheel. You can't get out of it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, those drugs that are there doing those things, keeping people in the hamster wheel, that's basically like the gas station attendant that wants to see the guy come put air in his tire all the time, right? Because he's paying to do that. And I think there are doctors that have a good intention, obviously.
No, they probably most do.
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that the training, you know, now you see Robert Kennedy, you know, pushing for nutrition training in medical school. My gosh.
And he's getting in trouble for it. So, but this is my question. This is my burning question, especially right now. As these truths are coming out, like that this drug like ivermectin or whatever could have been helpful in COVID and masks weren't really effective. And any virologist would say if it was, you know, the types of masks, it'd have to be the right one because it would just go right through. But 100%. But they had their reasons.
Yeah.
But the challenge is when the truth comes out that these drugs do help, or this is the type of mask they should have been saying, or this is the modalities they should have been using, and this is the medications they should have been using during that time, but there's a group of people who still won't believe it because they all this separation that's happening between it's no longer science, it's no longer what's helpful to humanity, it's what's going to fit the narrative that I believe.
Yes.
So how do we fix that in medicine? Because I think that's the problem, because now like RFK is doing this, but there's psychology behind this, right? Once you believe a certain narrative and are over there, you'll die on that sword. And that's unfortunate. Because I mean, I don't live my life like that. No. You know, I mean, you could say whatever and I'm going to be like, that's interesting. Like, I'd love to learn more, right? Is that really true? How can we, you know, show me some, show me some research and studies. Like, let's talk about that. Like, you might disagree. So how do we fix that problem?
I think it's a really, it's a challenging problem. It's because we're trying to change the narratives that's been out there for so long. And it's something that the people that are opening their eyes to this now, the patients that come to me are these people, and doctors too now are starting to realize, that's why that we have doctors as patients, and they're starting to realize that this system that we have now is broken, and we've got to do something to change it. And just even to the medical schools, you know, going back to that, but the curriculum, where's the curriculum coming from? It's coming from pharmaceutical companies that put the books out that tell you to think about, you know, drugs whenever there's a symptom. I mean, I think that's what it is. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a very difficult thing to change, but I think that we're ripe for that now. I think that Kennedy being in office, I think that that was a big step in the right direction. And Casey Means and people are stepping up and talking in front of Congress about, and it's going to take lawmakers. I mean, unfortunately, that's our democracy the way it is. Our country is run by, you know, lawmakers, which basically make policy.
I just ran into, but here's the problem. I ran into a nurse at Walmart. I had this videotaped, by the way. And she agrees that I shouldn't be wearing plastic. She's like, I'm a nurse. She's like, this is all money. Follow the money trail. Right. So she believed all those things, but she absolutely hates RFK. Absolutely hates him and thinks everything she's doing is going to take out America. But she has. But she still believed it's like, oh, this, I've been a nurse for 25 years. I've seen people get sick. You know, we did agree when we were talking. I'm like, where can we agree? Right. And there's some things with RFK that, I, you know, I mean, I don't believe anyone blindly. I don't follow anyone. I don't know about you.
No, I don't either. I don't believe any man. I don't even trust Jesus Christ.
There you go. You know, I go to the source, and you know, I don't, there's no, I'm not a worshiper of man. Let's put it that way. So, but he does have a lot of great, ideas and principles. And, but there's many people believe that he's burning down the healthcare system in America.
I've heard that before.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. Cause I mean, it's just like nutrition, farming. I mean, it's
common sense.
Yeah. It's so, yeah, it's like getting back to nature, getting back to, you know, God's way of doing things, if you will. I think it's simple. I don't think it's controversial, but some people don't. So that's the fight.
That's the challenge.
That's the challenge. It's not really a fight, but that's the challenge. And my hope is, is as you're on the ground floor and doing this movement in West Virginia, that more and more people are going to see. It's like it's based in the results. You can't. What's the saying when it comes to results? You can't argue the results.
No.
And my blood work was this, and now it's this. You know, I couldn't walk, now I can. You know, I couldn't talk, now I can talk. I couldn't sleep, now I can sleep over and over and over again.
And that's what perpetuates the business that we have.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because we had a business coach and he was asking me what our marketing budget was. And I said, we don't have one. And he goes, wait a minute. You don't market, you don't, you know, spend money on marketing to get people to come. I said, you don't have to. Once the people that go out and talk about these things, and it's life changing. And when you change somebody's life like that, like they can't walk and they come in and then they leave, you know, after a few visits and they're walking and they're having a normal life and they no longer have the symptoms that they used to have and they're off their medicines, they talk.
Yeah.
And you can't keep them quiet.
Yeah. I know when I got well, I couldn't stop talking
about and it. That's our marketing. Honestly. Yeah. It's the people that get better. And you're right. I think more and more people, as they see those kind of things happen, it's going to continue to push the agenda down this way. And I think this pendulum is swinging in the right direction.
When someone's still sick, regardless of how much they don't like someone or individual and they're suffering enough, then they might be open to like, oh, Sally, what are you doing with Dr. Randy?
Yeah.
You know, I don't like him because he's a Christian. I don't like him because he's this. I don't like him because he said nice things about RFK. I don't like him because, you know, whatever.
Okay. But, you know, but if he makes me well, I'm okay with that, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what you need to do. I feel like the people that are interested in what we do, I mean, it's like, I've been on both sides of this thing. So yeah. I can tell you from both sides now, the most rewarding thing of all is taking a patient from taking them off of medicines and getting them well, and they no longer need their medicines. We have this jar at our office called the Freedom Jar. Mm-hmm. And in that jar, it's about this big around and about that tall, is all the pills that people got off of that came to us. There's these pharmaceutical drugs. And we have pictures of biggest smiles in the world, people dumping their medicines into that jar. And they are so happy. And it is, the stories are just amazing. And it warms my heart to even talk about it. Makes me bring it to
you. I think that's one of the power of love is part of your medicine, I'd have to say.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, going back to the way God intended us to heal. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are created by a creator that gave us the ability to have an immune system and to have mm-hmm. things that work the way they do.
We're not broken.
Right. We're not. And honestly, if you can go back to that, go back to the maker and the way he had made you mm-hmm. to fix things. And that's what we do. I mean, and spirituality is a big part of it, honestly. Warren, I know you're a Christian. I really, I feel like that's what kind of knit us together, you know, when we first met. And it's the thing that I can't put a finger on what it is every time I see somebody that's a Christian. But when they come to the office and they're not a Christian, and we talk about that. I think that it would be wrong for me not to bring that up when we're trying to heal people. Because I feel like that your mind, body, and spirit, you're just not a physical body. Mm-hmm. And without
that
other piece, it's like a three-legged stool with only two legs. I mean, you gotta deal with all three. And that's a big part of what we do. And I think God can heal people that, and prayer works. I mean, we ask people, do you want us to pray for you?
Yeah, regardless of what they believe.
Yeah, exactly.
Prayer always works.
Yeah. You're on the same page with me.
Yeah, it always works. And you have to be your authentic self. And anytime you're doing something, say, hey, this is who I am. I want to help you, you know, but I like to pray with my patients, which is like prayer. You know, I believe that your spirituality has a big part to do with your healing.
No, 100%.
So I'd like to help you with that as well.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Mindset matters. I mean, if you feel like the worst doctor, you can have the worst doctor, but if you believe in him, there's studies that show psychology says that you're going to get well.
Yeah.
You'll have a better chance of getting well and improving if you trust the doctor that you're seeing.
Yeah. After coaching and being at a business, essentially coaching functional medicine doctors, mm-hmm. how to help people. And what I saw over and over again was the confident doctors got better results because their belief transcended into their belief. And if that patient believed or client believed in the doctor, the outcomes were through the roof. So those charismatic, like hopeful, powerful doctors that spoke their mind and they were full of joy and they were full of love. They really had much, because I think it's an energy exchange, right? They have low energy, they have a low frequency, and you have a high frequency, right? Because you get into prayer and you're taking care of your body and you're seeing results, mm-hmm. and you just take that and you keep giving it, and it keeps coming, and you keep giving it. And
the energy.
Yeah, and it flows.
Energy medicine's real. That was one of the things I learned from different than traditional medicine. There is a thing called energy medicine.
So you are really crazy. I mean, you're Christian, you're energy medicine. You got all kinds of labels.
I got all kinds of labels. Probably everybody will hate me after this, but that's okay because honestly, that's who we are. We get better. People get better, and the energy that you carry with you in the morning when we tell people to get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and say it's going to be a good day.
Yeah,
and I'm going to get better. You know, and we teach them to do that. And that if you set the tone with that right off the bat. If you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror and you hate everything you see and you're going to have a bad day and you say that, you're going to probably have a bad day.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard to get out of it. And so we teach people to do that. And energy is important. But, you know, God created sunlight. I mean, we teach, you know, and I guess I'm a little bit of a vitalist in that regard. I mean, sunlight and water and grounding and all those things.
That's all the things I found that work.
It works. And, well, you know, you're an example. You're the guy that got better, right? Yeah. So I think that if we don't go down those pathways, we're missing a huge chance to help people.
I've heard you say that most doctors look at lab results and they say normal, but those normal results are actually keeping their clients sick. Can you talk about that?
Oh, my gosh. I think of all the things in medicine that I found to be one of the most frustrating things was once I found out that the lab work that we see every day that's mm-hmm. coming in the lab tests on the paper is being used to treat people. And that is a controversial statement, probably more than anything. But the reason it's very bad is because it's not really a good indication of who you are, what's going on inside your body. There is a little bit of help with it. Just like analogy I use in my patients is I tell them that you have a gas tank in your car that holds gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
But if I measure how much gasoline is in that tank, if I turn on the switch and it goes to full, that doesn't mean the car is going to run.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing occurs in your body. If you've got vitamins and minerals floating around in your body and I measure them, thyroid, whatever, we talked about that before. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean the thyroid's functioning properly. Okay. No more than the gas tank in the tank tells me if the engine's running properly. So when I started to figure this out, it was really, there's a lot of people that say they do functional medicine, right? And I agree. There's a lot of talk about that. It's a talking point mm-hmm. now, and there's a lot of labels, but there's very few people doing functional testing. And there's a difference. And I don't know if you know the difference.
Well, tell us the difference.
So the difference is that functional testing looks at the way things operate inside the body from the function of things, not just looking at what's in a tank, floating about, does the engine run or not? And we talked about thyroid in the past, and testing a thyroid by looking at T3 and T4 is not adequate. I mean, you can't do a TSH that comes out of the hypothalamus and think that's measuring your thyroid function. It's not. But doctors do that all the time. And then, you know, the traditional test will do a TSH and a reflex T4. But T4 is not even active thyroid. That's coming out of the thyroid gland, but it goes from T4 down to the liver and gets converted into T3 in the gut and the liver. And the T3 is the active form of thyroid. So if you're going to measure anything, at least do a T3 level. And even at that, though, your thyroid may not still not be functioning. And how many people come to me and they say, look, doc, I have all the symptoms of thyroid disease. I have brittle hair, I have no energy, I can't sleep well at night, all the things, no sex drive, et cetera. But they've been told they have a normal thyroid because their TSH is normal.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing occurs with blood. I mean, if you get a B12 level on a patient,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean their B12 is being used properly by their body. Because when the body uses B12, what's it make? It makes an organic acid. The organic acid can be measured mm-hmm. in the blood. Maybe let's measure that. That's functional testing.
Right.
This is where functional medicine separates itself from traditional medicine. If you start looking at organic acid tests, methylmalonic acid, for example, being made in the body, then you know your B12 is being used efficiently in the body. You could have as much B12, and I see people with high B12 levels being told, don't take B12, you don't need it, but their body's not using B12.
Is this analogy work? So if your gas, you have B12, lots of fuel in the gas tank, but there's no byproducts of that gas being burnt, then that means the fuel isn't being used.
Right. You've got gas in the tank, but if you hold your hand down at the exhaust pipe, there's nothing coming out.
Right. It's not running.
Right. So whenever we are putting the hand to the gas down to the exhaust pipe, that's like measuring organic acids mm-hmm. in the body. We want to know what's going on in there. I mean, if you only look at blood work, it's not adequate. You're going to miss it.
Yeah.
And many doctors, let me tell you, you're being treated just by looking at blood work on a piece of paper.
Yeah, especially the misuse of testosterone, and estrogen,
terrible
progesterone, and
I think the hormones and the endocrine system in general is probably one of the most misunderstood of all the systems and tested improperly by endocrinologists and gastroenterologists for liver. But also for OB docs and gynecologists, because they're putting people on, for example, I'll give you another example. Let's say that you come to me and you're a young lady and you mm-hmm. say, hey, I need birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, here, we'll write you a script for that, go get it filled. How do I know that birth control, the estrogen in the birth control is not being converted in the body into something that's harming that patient? For example, there are four different kinds of estrogens, E1, 2, 3, and 4. E4 is very harmful to the body. It's the cancer-causing estrogen. And there's a lot of women that come to me and they've been taking hormones and hormone replacements, but never have checked to see what's going on inside the body functional medicine again, mm-hmm. to see if their body is using that estrogen properly and getting rid of the estrogen properly. So they'll have high levels of E4, and the more estrogen they get in those pills, the higher their E4 is. And that's very damaging to it, right? It's get breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, you name it, endometriosis, all because the doctor never checked to see what's going on inside the body functionally.
It's like turning the car on with the garage closed.
Yes, they're going to die. That's right.
So we're finishing this analogy.
That's right. I like that analogy. I'll have to use that one.
After decades of being an ER doctor, what was the biggest lie that you learned in medical school that you now have to teach your patients to unlearn?
Man, that's a tough one. I would say that the biggest lie, misconception, is that everything that you learned in medical school was correct. It sounds like it's a big subject. It is, because when I found out that it wasn't, that sent me down into a little bit of a spiral. And it frustrated me because I don't know why we weren't taught the things that that I've learned since medical school. I mean, it makes sense to me that we should have learned those things. But for example, I mean, just knowing, you know, about functional medicine in general, I mean, why don't they teach you that in medical school? Why don't they teach you that you can't just check the gas tank to find if the engine runs, right? Mm-hmm. That seems so simple and logical, but that doesn't occur. So when I found out that wasn't happening and I found out I should be checking other things, I even tell my doctors that come to me as patients now, I tell them these things. They're like, well, my gosh, do you have low vitamin D? And they'll say, well, I see patients with low vitamin D all the time. I said, well, how do you treat them? Oh, we give them a D2, 50,000 units once a week. I said, do you think that's helping them? Do you use anything with it? Do you give them K2? Do you give them D3? What about D3? And the typical response, I don't know what that is. And so that's the stuff that really frustrated me. So if you want to know what the biggest, I don't know if you want to call it a lie, but the misconception, I guess I would say, would be that everything that you learned is exactly the truth. And it's really not, because they teach you to use D2. Mm-hmm. They teach you about TSH to check thyroids. They teach you about looking at the B12 level in the body to see if it's adequate or not. And that's, none of those things are true. So yeah, it's a frustration. I think that's the biggest thing.
And then your clients and patients come in with those misconceptions as well.
Yes. And when you start talking like this, they look at you like, why didn't my doctor tell me that?
Yeah, it's unnerving.
It's unnerving, and I don't really want to step on other doctors' feet because they're just ignorant to it. They don't know because they weren't taught. You can't know something if you don't know, right? So it's like, do you hold them accountable for that? No, I hold the system accountable for that. I think that in the end, I mean, the we're going to have to change the way we do education. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's going to get better. I mean, I believe that is going to happen. It's just going to take time.
Yeah, we're there. So one thing you wanted to bring up, and I'm going to make sure before I ask your questions, you have that genetics, like how important are genetics for people getting well? Because we talk about genes and, you know, all of this. And the reason I'm sick is because my genetics told me I was sick. Right. Or I have a death sentence because my mom got cancer. I'm going to get cancer. Yeah. So what part does genetics really play in the health decline?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial. I mean, I would say that it's probably one of the most important things that we do for patients that gets the most benefit for them. And to me, I told the patient that when you come out of the womb and the baby's handed to the mother, they should give you the genetic report with it for the baby. I think with that, you could really help that child to go through and navigate through life in a way that would prevent a lot of problems. And the reason I know that is because, you know, genetics back when I was in medical school, nobody talked much about that. I mean, we knew there were genes. We knew what some of the genes were. Now we've mapped out the entire human genome, 20,000 genes. Now we're starting to learn what genes do. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. See, because we knew what they were, genes were. We've got them all labeled with the names. They have RSI numbers and all the things.
Now gene expression.
The problem, yes. Now we're starting to think about what genes actually, how they're expressed. How you, and not only that, but how can you change the expression of genes? Mm-hmm. And that's the cool part about it, because I can tell you a patient that comes to me and says, look, I've got three family members got Alzheimer's disease. And I don't want to have Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you there are genes that set you up to have Alzheimer's disease. These genes, these APOE genes, which trigger dyslipidemia in the brain, can lead to all kind of tangles and things which we now know are associated with it. And not only that, if you're a poor detoxer, you're a poor methylator from genetics, and you can't detox well, and you've got heavy metals crossing the blood-brain barrier, aluminum in particular, what do you find in every patient autopsy that Alzheimer's is high aluminum levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you've got those genes in a family history, you're high risk.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Well, the genetic report empowers you. And I had one lady said, I don't want to know my genes. I said, why? She said, because I just worry about them. I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What doesn't it empower you to do something to help yourself? And I told her, look, now I know you've had these genes. I can actually tell you what to do to prevent those heavy metals from crossing your blood-brain barrier. You can detox them, right? You can get them out. You can quit putting them in your body. Find ways to do that. We know that it's aluminum. We know how to help you methylate well. We can help you do that. If you have dyslipidemia, let's monitor the lipids. Let's get them balanced. Let's balance the cell membranes inside your brain so that they can actually do what they're supposed to do and detox the way they're supposed to. That's where the genetic pieces come into play. And I didn't get taught that in medical school. Nobody taught me about that. When methylation came out and everybody started talking about methylation, and you probably heard about that a long time ago, it is a big piece of the puzzle, but it's such a small piece of the puzzle. It's not the puzzle, right? A lot of people think that's it, right? I hear these podcasters on there talking about methylation, and we're going to methylate everybody. We're giving them methyl groups, and we're going to help them. And
they become popular now.
Yeah, they don't talk about, that you can over-methylate people. Yeah. And when that happens, they're not happy. I had one poor fellow that tried to help himself by going down and heard a podcast and went down and bought a bunch of B vitamins and over-methylated and ended up in the emergency room with tachycardia. In an anxiety, panic attack.
Mm-hmm. I've done that. I've done high dose hydroxycobalamin sublingual.
There you go.
A little was good, and too much it does.
You found out the hard way.
Yeah, a little bit of anxiety. I didn't get tachycardia, but I'm like, what did I do? It's like I overdid it. Yeah.
Right. So these other genes. So you're just talking about MTHFR. That's the most popular one. Gets all the press, but there's many others. There's MTHFS. There's so many other parts of this puzzle that you can put all together, and to know how to use that really is important. So I think when you do genetic testing on people, you have to really go over it with them to the point that they understand it. Mm-hmm. You can't just send them a video and say, watch this video and you're going to get it. That just doesn't work. You have to show them how this fits into your life, because it's not as simple as just looking at MTHFR. And saying, "Oh, you need methyl vitamins." It doesn't work that way, Warren.
And that's what most people are doing.
And that's what they're doing. And there's a lot of people out there.
How do I say it wrong? What is it?
MTHFR.
MTHFR. Okay.
Yeah, I have
the mother gene.
Yes.
MTHFR. Why am I messing this up?
MTHFR.
Yeah, it's travel day. MTHFR.
That's
got
right.
It.
But there's so many more.
But they label themselves. I have the MTHFR gene.
Yes.
MTHFR.
Oh, yeah. People come to me, tell me that.
Yeah, so that's my whole world is broken.
Right.
I have the gene. That's why my life is screwed.
I'm doomed.
Yeah.
What can I do?
Yeah.
Well, then you have to look at COMT and all the other pieces of the puzzle, vitamin D, the genes of VDR to BDTAC, BDR-TAC. There's so many pieces of the puzzle that fits together. The cool thing about it is you can take those genetic reports, though, and actually come up with actionable items. And that's the thing I really like about it. And that's where people don't really realize it. You can actually change somebody's life by changing their gene expression.
Absolutely.
With nutrigenomics.
Mm-hmm.
So nutrigenomics, changing epigenetics to change genetic expression. How cool is that? I mean,
super cool.
You're not doomed.
And you can do it with vitamins, food,
yes,
mindset,
lifestyle, yes,
grounding,
yes, detoxing,
heavy metals trigger gene expression like crazy.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, you have this freedom jar where everyone puts their meds in. What is one of the drugs that was the most shocking that someone got off of?
No doubt about it, 100%. Well, there's two. I'll give you two.
Two.
The two most popular ones, SSRI drugs. These are like Prozac and things like that. And the second would be like Prilosec, acid blockers.
So those ones, that's the two most common that get.
I had to add a third, it would be statins.
Statins. Someone comes in, right? And you help them.
Yeah.
And they had this crazy drug that they dumped into the big jar.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any of those?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot.
Not the most common. The question was
the people.
Yeah, so
do we have any people like that?
Yeah. So I know that there's statins. There's, the the common ones, right, in the jar. But what is some like meds that it kind of shocked you that they got off of these?
Adderall. Yeah. I mean, these drugs, which have been, they think they can't live without them.
Yeah.
And they've been on them for years. And I don't know if you know this, but do you realize that SSRI drugs were never made to be used for more than 6 weeks? And there's people been on them for years. And they're dangerous. I mean, after a period of time, they're not good for you, obviously. Or they wouldn't have that limitation on the amount of time that they were supposed to be used for. And so, yeah, I mean, we have patients that have all kinds of drugs that they put in there. I mean, if you could name the drug, they probably went in there. I'm not kidding. I mean, and the way we get people off of those is kind of interesting because we use their genetics and we can tell them from their genetic report what their neurotransmitters are doing. So let's say, let's use a good example. Let's say that you're not making serotonin. Mm-hmm. So a doctor sees you and you're depressed. And he says, Warren, we're going to give you a SSRI drug. This is going to help to keep the serotonin in the synapse longer so that you will feel better. Okay, so he gives it to you. You go home, you start taking it for 1 week, you feel better. After a week, it starts losing its efficacy. Okay, and then what happens is you go back to the doctor and say, Doc, it's not working anymore. What do you think he does?
He ups it.
So he gives you a bigger dose. You go back and you feel a little bit better for a little while longer, and then you start feeling like it's not working again. Mm-hmm. So you go back to the doctor. Well, this time, when you go back the second time, usually he's thinking, we're going to change it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Switch it to a different one.
Or add to it.
All right.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to add another one.
We're going to layer another one.
Yeah. That's what happened. So not realizing
a little bit of Wellbutrin with a little bit of Effexor with a little bit of
all of it.
Yeah.
And people are on multiple of these, mm-hmm. right? So they come in, they have this going on. We get their genetic reports back. It comes back that they're not making serotonin. Okay, that's their problem. They're not making serotonin. So when you're taking a serotonin uptake inhibitor, but you don't make serotonin, do you see the problem? Mm-hmm. There's nothing to inhibit the uptake of. That's why initially it feels a little bit better because the little bit that you might be making, it kind of helps it a little bit. Then over time, though, what happens is the drug, then you higher doses. What do you get? You get the side effects.
Yeah, because there's no more
serotonin.
Yeah, no serotonin.
There's no serotonin. So our job is to look at their genetics. Are they making serotonin or not making it? If they're not making it, let's make them make it. How can we do that? We could take their genetic report and give them things like 5-HTP, other things which can actually stimulate their body down the pathways to make serotonin. Isn't that cool? So
makes sense to me.
Well, so what you wouldn't want to do is have them doing that and being on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. You get a condition called serotonin syndrome, which obviously would be bad. But so what we do is we start to increase their serotonin production, but at the same time, weaning them off of their SSRI drug. So they get the benefit of feeling better because they're making serotonin now, just like they were on the drug, but they can now get off the drug. The thing you can't do is you can't just stop the drug.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Very bad. Yeah. And that's very dangerous. And so we've had people that come to us that want to get off these medicines, and that's why the freedom jar is getting fuller every day, is because they are, and we're using genetics to help us do that.
I love that you name it freedom jar, because it is. I mean, being on medications feels like you're broken, and you feel like you're in chains. Something's wrong with it.
At one time?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you know what it feels like.
You feel broken. You feel depressed. You're relying on a drug. You know, lucky for me, it didn't work very well. So, you know, I had a 5%. I must not make serotonin.
You probably don't. Well, let's say you get on these drugs and then you don't get the benefit, but you have more and more of them. What is the side effect of taking the serotonin reuptake inhibitor?
I mean, it could be suicide. It can be.
Exactly.
It could be like it's right on the box.
Yes. It tells you right on there. Suicide. Yeah. And so
I considered it.
Yeah, you take a patient that's already depressed, you put them on a drug that has a side effect of making them be suicidal. Does that make any sense at all?
No, especially if you don't know if they're not making serotonin.
Right. And how many doctors are checking that? They're not checking it.
You have to check it. It should be malpractice that you don't.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And just like I think it's malpractice if you put people on estrogen drugs, which without checking whether they're making E4. If you're making E4 and making cancer out of that, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, there's too many things like that happening. It doesn't have to be this way.
And that's something really important to think about. It's before you take a medication, be really damn certain that doctor thought it through. Yeah. Because you do need to be your own doctor. You can't just, you know, like we said, you know, you just can't trust everyone, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
You have to get multiple opinions. You have to really understand the condition. What is this drug going to do? What are the consequences? What are some of the, and with AI today, people can ask these questions, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's good. And they should. I mean, I tell, you know, I tell patients all the time, what we do is science, and I approve what you need. I'm just not handing you something, say, try this, it might work for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you what you need based on science. So if you have a low serotonin, I'm going to have you make serotonin. I'll know if you're not using B12. So then I know I can give you the right form of B12 because I did the test to show what you need.
Mm-hmm. And some people can get sick from certain forms.
Right. And if I give you the right kind, you're going to get well because there's science behind all of that. And I have the research to show you. If you really want to see it, I have it. And I can prove it. And that's why people like coming, because they're getting well, because they're getting results. And the results come because we use science to back up everything we do. This is not just pie in the sky, you know, woo-woo medicine, right?
This Except is, for the energy stuff a little bit.
A little bit. But anyway.
This is why people fly from all over the world to see you.
It is. And I feel like that in the end, the whole thing about
Cheryl.
And Cheryl. Well, they see Cheryl too. She's a big part of our practice. So, I mean, I wouldn't do it if it wasn't for her. I wouldn't. She's the driving force that got me started.
Yeah.
So
she has that positive energy.
She does.
Yeah. She's a light. So was it when Cheryl worked with your grandson and you saw that autism reverse? Was that kind of like the telltale moment?
That was the aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, oh my gosh, there's something to this though. And it happened pretty quick too. I mean, it wasn't like it took a long time. She started detoxing, quit vaccinating him, started to detox him. It was like it just everything started to change. And I was like, my gosh, what are you doing? And she started telling me all this stuff. I'm like, I need to learn that. I don't know anything about that. I'm a doctor. I have to know that because I can help people. And that was the aha moment for sure. No doubt about it. It was 100% what started this practice.
That's beautiful, right? So you're a medical doctor. Your wife married a medical doctor.
Yeah.
She saw that medicine wasn't able to help her grandson, but the love for that grandchild drove a decision.
I drove it.
Yeah, drove a decision and didn't take no for an answer. No. That's the power of women, by the way.
Yes.
And we're just like meat sacks over here, you know. No. And they go through, now you guys both have beautiful hearts. So, and then you don't take no for an answer. Yeah. You have hope.
Well,
and then that, so I think that's true of life though. It's like, you know, if you lean into something enough and don't take no for an answer, you get a result. And that result can change not just your life or your grandson's life, but how many hundreds and now thousands of lives based on the love. So it all started in love.
That's amazing.
Love is the strongest medicine.
God is love.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Well, this is...
I listened to a song called Love is the Medicine.
It's great.
I love it.
That's a good song. I'm not going to listen for that one.
Individual to travel across the country to see you. What is one of the most challenging cases that you saw?
Probably a vaccine injury, COVID vaccine injury. A fellow was totally normal, working, had no medical issues whatsoever. Was working in a job where he was had to get the vaccine. He didn't want it. His family, I guess you might call it a crunchy mom, and you know, the family was living healthy lifestyle, et cetera. But he had to get the vaccine because he was working in a place where they required it.
Yeah.
And so he got the vaccine. It was a very short time afterwards. I'm talking probably 2 weeks afterwards, he told me that he started to have symptoms. And the symptoms were that he would wake up at night and he felt like he was dying. And he said, I had never had illnesses before. I had nothing. And he would wake up at night. And in fact, it was so bad, he wrote his wife notes to say, tell the kids I love them and, you know, I'm dying. And this was totally off the wall for him. This is a healthy guy. He was chopping wood. He was at a camp. He was doing all the things.
Mm-hmm.
He came to me and he was at a point where he was using a walker to ambulate. He couldn't even walk anymore. It was very heartbreaking to hear his story. And his wife, lovely little wife and bunch of old children coming with him and just in tears about how her husband is no longer who he used to be. I mean, he went to He'd been to, I think, four neurologists. He went and had CT scans, MRIs of his brain. He went to the ER several times. She'd take him to the ER when he felt like he was dying. Mm-hmm. They could never find anything. And it was such a challenging case because I just wondered if he would. In fact, he was considering, you know, just ending it all. Mm-hmm. He said, I can't live like this. Lost his job. He couldn't go back to work. He had a good job in a place where he was an engineer. He ran meetings. He could no longer run the meetings. I mean, he just basically couldn't work anymore. He couldn't mm-hmm. walk. His life was turned upside down. Very challenging case. And so that was a really hard one. I think that when he started to turn around, that was a key. Whenever I started helping this guy detox, and we began to detox, and we were using Epranol and these spike protein dissolving supplements and different things that we gave him, and he started slowly getting better. And when I saw that, I had hope, and he had hope. And so all the I want to end it all went away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a believer, and we were able to talk about that and how God had a plan for his life, and then this was probably not it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were praying with him, and so he slowly but surely started turning around, and he actually got better, and he was able to go back to work, but it was a challenging case because he had been to many, many doctors, and that was probably one of them. You know, I get challenging cases all the time, Warren, because many people that come to me have been to many doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one lady, she said, look, you're the 20th doctor I've been to. If you can't help me, I'm done.
Like, okay. Gee, thanks.
Okay, but that
no pressure.
And I was like, okay. She had a young girl.
Did you get her well?
Yeah.
Not you, but her body got herself
God,
well. Yeah.
God helped her.
Yeah.
I was just a hand helping to do that. But
yeah
she's doing it. She wouldn't come out of her room. Her daughter wouldn't come out of the room. She was basically antisocial.
Mm-hmm.
When she got better, she posted on Facebook, this is a picture of my daughter at a restaurant. And she said, this is what the caption said. Mm-hmm. It said, most people wouldn't think anything about this, but my daughter hasn't been out of the house for years. And now here she is at a restaurant. Just something simple like that.
Yeah.
Now she's driving her car. She's going to college. She's doing all that stuff that mom never thought she would do.
Yeah, it sounds like love is the foundation, once again, of your
guys'
practice.
Part of it.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, she was toxic, overloaded with heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
You can relate.
I can relate. Yep, I can relate. Not being antisocial and not being want to be around people. And man, I still have some of that habit because you develop these habits and then you're like, I
don't believe that.
Now I'd say, I guess I'm antisocial because I just want to be home with my family.
That's a good.
But I had to get positive mindset before I came here, because I used to think, oh, I have to leave my family. And I was in prayer and God spoke to me, you know, in my heart, this is what I heard. Go there and have a good time. Have a better attitude about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, enjoy yourself, expect miracles. Like, don't go into this like you're going to leave your family. Take the love of your family and what you've created and share that love and lift other people up and share the joy and share the love.
Amen.
And that's what you guys do.
Yeah.
You know, as I glance over at Cheryl and
yeah.
you, as soon as you walk in a room, you feel that anticipation and hope and love. It just exudes from both
of you. I've seen tears flow many times from the couches that we talk to people on. They leave with hope. I was on a podcast the other day with a lady, and she was doing that. And she said, the only doctor I ever came to, that, number one, prayed with me, asked me if he could pray with me. And number two, when I left there, I always felt like there was hope. Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
People need hope. So nicotine, is it dangerous? Is it safe? Does it help people?
So the literature goes back a long ways on nicotine because mm-hmm. people have been using nicotine for a long time.
Yeah, they have.
So it got a lot of bad rap whenever the CDC has started to allow tobacco companies to add things that made nicotine, not nicotine, but cigarettes
mm-hmm.
addictive. And then the thought was, well, it's the nicotine that's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nicotine is not addictive.
True. I know that.
Do you know your body has nicotine receptors?
I do know that.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone else knows that, but I do. I know enough to be dangerous.
And when the nicotine receptors are occupied by the wrong things, things go sideways in your body. Mm-hmm. And so occupying it with nicotine can actually be beneficial for you. It upregulates many things in your body through your immune system, the literature goes so far as it's for weight loss, it's for mood stabilization, mm-hmm. it's for healing, it's for pain control, it's for all the things you can find. Just Google nicotine and put that word in beside of it, and you'll find articles that come up and show that people used to use it for those things. And, you know, it made me think about the days whenever, you know, I remember they talked about doctors recommended people smoke. Mm-hmm. You remember those days?
Yeah.
Back in the 50s, I guess it was.
I don't remember it, but I'd heard
and
it.
Doc- and you don't remember because you weren't around.
Yeah.
But doctors used to recommend people smoke. And at that time, you know, you could get your tobacco and roll your own. It wasn't yeah. like these cigarettes now. They're loaded with all these chemicals.
So you walk into the doctor's office and he's like, I'm depressed. I need to lose weight. And yeah. the doctor would say, you need to smoke some cigarettes.
We're going to get you some Camels.
Yeah, we're going right. to, you need to prescribe you some Camels.
Yeah.
No, so this is why doctors prescribe Camels in the 50s.
I'm not promoting smoking, yeah. but I would definitely say that nicotine can be very beneficial for people. And you know what? The thing that was kind of funny, and I know this research came out recently, that during COVID, the people that you thought would be mm-hmm. the worst because they smoked and all mm-hmm. this stuff, they didn't end up on ventilators. And why was that? Nobody could figure that out. Now we kind of know that when they were smoking and they were using tobacco, that the nicotine receptors were occupied by nicotine mm-hmm. and not by spike protein producing garbage, right? So whenever that got into your body and it got on the nicotine receptors, then yeah, you got a bad thing happen to you. And you might end up on a ventilator in a hospital, and 80% of those people died. But the people that smoked didn't do that. So that was kind of interesting.
Super interesting.
So for me as a doctor now to say, you know, here I am wearing a nicotine patch, it stirs up some controversy mm-hmm. in people. And they say, well, did you used to smoke? No, I never did smoke, but I definitely could tell you that nicotine is important to help you with your health. And I think there's a lot of people out there now that would say that if you wear nicotine patches, they can actually stimulate your body to heal and be healthier. And so why not?
Yeah, well, you can't eat enough eggplant, that's for sure.
That's where do you get nicotine in nature, right? Besides tobacco.
Eggplant,
tomatoes, potatoes, mm-hmm. they're in plants.
Yeah, but they're all nightshades. You don't eat those.
I know, right?
Yeah.
They're all bad for you.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Functional medicine doctors, they just run away from nightshades completely. But if you cook the food and there's so much nutrition, like, and you're missing out, I mean, God didn't make it for you to run away. Oh, it's a nightshade.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it has nicotine.
Same with CBD. I mean, you have cannabinoid receptors in your mm-hmm. body too, you know? And
CBD really helped me.
CBD helps.
I haven't used it in a while, but I overuse it. I was taking high doses and I was getting tired. That's like, at dinner, my wife's like, you are sleeping on the table. I'm like, I don't know, something's wrong. I'm gonna get my blood work done.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, before somebody runs out and buys nicotine patches at CVS or down at Rite Aid, you have to get the right kind because
ones that aren't toxic.
My daughter-in-law, who is this kind of funny story, she heard about the nicotine patches and she's like, I'm going to get me some. So she goes out before we could get hold of her and she goes and buys herself some down at CVS. Mm-hmm. She's sick as a dog, right? She puts it on, she's sick, she's really throwing up. I mean, just really miserable. My wife goes up to the house where she's at and says, Michael, what's wrong with you? And she told her she had the nicotine patches and she said, let me see those. She looked at the ingredient list and it's got all these chemicals in it, just mm-hmm. like it would be if you're smoking cigarettes, right? And it's all these chemicals that are added to it.
Petroleum-based, carcinogenic, hormone-disrupting.
You can't do that. Yeah. So there are certain brands that are good and some that are really not. Same with CBD, I would say. That's what we've been using and I haven't had any side effects from it at all.
Has it improved your health?
Oh, I think I have so much more energy when I use it. That's the main thing I noticed. I haven't been using it long. We just started doing this recently, but I can tell you for sure, it definitely increases your energy.
So long haulers are getting their taste and smell back from taking nicotine.
Yeah. You give them the nicotine and it displaces, I guess it's a spike protein or whatever's on those receptors and they get your smell back and taste back.
That's amazing. That's a huge find.
It's a huge find.
So many people are going to be sharing that.
Well, they need to.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And nicotine's giving you energy. Just make sure you get organic and ones that are used with
the right
clove oil and essential oils and not a bunch of petroleum-based hormone-disrupting compounds. But nicotine can be really helpful.
Exactly.
Share that.
Yeah.
Share that with people who lost their taste and smell.
Same as with CBD. CBD can be really helpful for people, but there's a lot of garbage on the market.
Yeah.
And
can be contaminated with heavy metals.
Hemp is one of the plants that takes everything out of the soil.
Mm-hmm. It's a bioremediator.
It does. And so, like sunflowers. If you don't get the right product from the right soil. So when we made our own CBD products, I had to do that. Remember the hand label chemist?
Yeah.
So we made our own products. We tested the soil before we sent it away, tested for 2,500 different contaminants. I found clean soil, at least as much as you can. You know, everything's falling out of the air now. But getting the product made in the right with the right terpenes, right? CBD is
terpenes are key.
Yeah, CBD is not just CBD. CBG, there's CBN, there's all different kinds of terpenes in there. So that's the right kind, and you got to find something that's really quality.
Get a good full spectrum.
Yeah,
CBD is really helpful. So we got to wrap up. It's been wonderful having you on the show. You're a great friend. Really love what you're doing. So if someone wants to find you guys and they want some help, how could they find you?
Part of the internet, www.integrativewellnesswv.com is a good way to find us. Our phone number is 304-808-6985. Reach out. You can find, if you want to consult, you can sign up there and we'll get right back with you.
I love it. Well, thanks for being here today, traveling to be here with me and all these other great doctors and practitioners. Cheryl, you're on next. We're going to do a podcast with you. Yeah. So thanks again for being here and look forward to having you on the show again.
Loved it. Thank you.